Hello, and welcome to the Computing Conversations column. This column is from the March 2015 issue of IEEE Computer and is titled Guido Van Rossum, The Modern Era of Python. There is supporting video material for this column that you can find in the IEEE Computer Society YouTube channel or in the IEEE Digital Library. I'm the editor of the column, and I'm Charles Severance from the University of Michigan. The popular programming language Python was created by Guido Van Rossum in 1989 and released as open source in early 1991. After the first National Institute of Standards and Technology hosted Python workshop in Gaithersburg, Maryland in 1994, Python's popularity rapidly increased around the world. But when an effort scales up, things can start to get a bit complicated. In this column, we continue our discussion from last month with Guido, this time discussing Python's evolution from version 1 to version 3. The 1994 NIST-sponsored workshop provided an opportunity for the nascent Python community to get together and figure out its next steps. For Guido, the workshop led to a job offer and a move to the United States.
From 95 to 2000, I worked in the U.S. in Northern Virginia at CNRI. And so there we worked through a lot of growth of the community and the infrastructure. We created the Python website. I think when I started there, Python 1.3 was about to be released. And then while I was there, we released several subsequent versions leading up to 1.5.2, which for some reason 1.5.0 was nothing, but 1.5.2 remained that sort of the standard, the gold standard of Python for a very long time afterwards.
CNRI made it possible for Guido and his colleagues, affectionately known as Python Labs, to make significant development investments to move Python forward. But some wondered if the product should move from open source to a model where some profit could be made. Guido found himself increasingly in conflict with the CNRI leadership about the licensing and ownership of Python. A small open source startup company started courting Guido.
They said, "Oh, you gotta come work for us. We're an open source startup. We're gonna build an open source portal, and find a number of other good Python engineers, and we'll give you all the time you want to sort of work on Python full time." And I thought, "Wow, that sounds great." Especially given that I already had this sort of discontent at the place where I had been for 5 years. And so reluctantly, I agreed to join these guys. Well, by the time we actually started, it was 2000, and our start date was May 15. The bubble had actually already burst. I wasn't even aware that there was a bubble and that it had burst.
No one really knew if the bubble might come back or if it was gone forever. So things continued along for a while.
We spent the summer in blissful ignorance working full-time on Python. We built and released Python 2, which was a big deal. It contained Unicode. We also, because we had to have some kind of graceful exit from my previous employer, who claimed certain amount of ownership over the source code. They didn't claim that it was all theirs, because it wasn't theirs to begin with. It was open source before I joined, which was an incredibly lucky circumstance. But nevertheless, they sort of claimed ownership over what had been added to it over the 5 years I worked there.
CNRI didn't claim to own all of Python, as it had existed long before Guido had started working there. But there was some disagreement as the ownership of the code that had been added while Guido and others were at CNRI.
With negotiations facilitated by Eric Raymond, and I think also even more in the background, Eben Moglen, the free software lawyer, we negotiated some way to make sure that Python remained open source with a license that CNRI's lawyers were agreeable to. Python still has a very awkward license, and the history of that awkward license lies in the way I left CNRI.
As the open source licensing issues were being worked out, the startup paying Guido and his team of developers started to crumble.
We didn't even move to the West Coast. We just sort of we worked from our homes, and I remember that once a week we had a team meeting and a catch-up with the leadership in California in my living room. Within 5 months, it was over. They suddenly stopped paying us. And those 5 months, we had had the time of our lives working on Python, doing this Python 2 release. We also had to do a Python 1.6 release that was actually nearly identical to Python 2.0. That was the first Python 1 release with CNRI's license on it.
They never got their last paychecks from the failed startup.
At the end of the year, the investors decided to stop funding it. And then suddenly we were out in the street. We were relatively well off because we had been paid well until then. All we got out of it was they had bought each of us a good computer to work from home. So that was our last payment because we talked to lawyers or somehow we got advice where someone said, yeah, sure, just hold on to that equipment. Nobody's gonna have the power to take that away from you.
But by the end of 2001, there was a great deal of commercial effort happening in the Python community, and several companies were interested in helping Python continue to move forward. Guido chose to work for Zope, a successful Virginia-based company that was heavily involved in the Python community. At this point, Guido was a little wiser from his experience with the failed startup, so he made sure to discuss the details of how he would work for Zope and continue to lead the Python community.
Zope was very clear. They said, we have no design on the ownership of that software. We want you guys are really good programmers. You guys are the top of the Python community. You are going to get some time, and it wasn't stated very precisely how much time, and we were fine with that at the time. We realized that what we had done for this failing startup was not actually a realistic option, that they would just pay our salaries and we would only do open source development. Nobody could maintain that.
Because Zope was based on Python, they benefited from their investment in Guido's team. During the Zope era, Python continued to mature and gain adoption.
I got a job offer to come work for a small startup again in California. This time I did my homework a little better. Python just kept sort of growing and the community kept self-organizing. And so what started out as a workshop we had with about 20, 25 people at most attending in 94, within a few years we had an annual, what we called the International Python Conference, with 300 or 400 people attending. I always encourage the community to self-organize rather than sort of looking at me for every decision.
As Python grew and was being used in many new ways, people started to think about improving it. Sometimes it was easy to add an element to Python, but other times a suggested improvement could break existing code. These inconsistencies, omissions, and errors were known as Python warts. Around 2005, the accumulated list of warts led to the realization that Python needed a major revision. This would be a huge effort because the revision wouldn't be backwards compatible and would break the ever-growing set of Python 2 applications. The idea was that non-backward compatible changes should be done only once and all at the same time.
In the middle of the first decade of the new century, this idea of Python 3000 was born. Like, okay, we have so many things that we would like to fix. We know roughly how to fix them, but the fix would be incompatible. Let's create a new version of the language that fixes a whole bunch of those things together, while at the same time not making the new version of the language so different that it alienates the users.
Python 3000, also known as Py3K, became Python 3, and the Python community took a very patient approach to a multi-year transition. They knew it would be necessary to fully support both Python 2 and Python 3 for many years. Python 3 was released in December 2008, and even now, 7 years later, there is still strong and active support for Python 2. Python's leadership is letting the community decide when to make the switch.
Every year at PyCon, I sort of take the census of, well, who is using Python 3 and how committed are they and how happy are they, and sort of Are there users actually using Python 3? And I see tremendous progress there every year, but we're not in sort of where we finally want to be. I mean, at the last Python conference, I had to sort of hold off a whole bunch of people with very good arguments why we should do a Python 2.8 release. And so Python 3 is winning the race, but the race hasn't been run yet. We're still in the race. It's clear that Python 3 is going to win it.
Python 3 is certainly past the tipping point and gaining more inertia all the time. But the approach to a version transition that has spanned nearly a decade of planning, development, and adjustment is a testament to letting an open community design its own destiny. With the influx of data mining and data analysis, Python is well positioned to become the premier language of data analysis and the language of choice for new programmers. The Python community is strong and active. PyCon now attracts more than 2,500 attendees annually, and there are more than 40 Python-related conferences each year in various locations around the world. Python is also a study of how the leadership of a community can sustain itself by working for open-minded companies that allow their employees to participate in building an open technology commons. Over the past two decades, Guido has worked for many companies that allowed him to remain involved with Python, including CWI, CNRI, Zope, Google, and now Dropbox. Guido brought his skills and knowledge he gained as an open source leader to each company, and in turn, companies supported his involvement with Python. It's a great model for sustaining open source technology. This column is from the March 2015 issue of IEEE Computer and is titled Guido Van Rossum, the Modern Era of Python. There is supporting video material for this column that you can find in the IEEE Computer Society YouTube channel or in the IEEE Digital Library. I'm the editor of the column, and I'm Charles Severance from the University of Michigan.